Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Jonathan Evans, Susan Shand, and Brian Lynn. But first, the Higher Education Report, with help from Lucia Milanig.
It did not take long for Louise Rosa Paulson to recognize that she needed something other than the traditional Danish higher education experience. Paulson is from Copenhagen, Denmark. The now 27-year-old started seeking a bachelor's degree at the University of Copenhagen in 2010. But right away, she felt that she was very different from the other students there. For one thing, she was completely uninterested in the culture of parties and drinking alcohol that was widespread at the school. So after a year there, Paulson decided to leave the school and travel for a while. She moved to the United States and completed an internship with the human rights group Amnesty International. Then she moved to London, England, to volunteer for the Mormon Church. Paulson joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in her teen years, although she had been raised as a member of the Church of Denmark. In 2014, Paulson decided to restart her education, but not back home. Instead, she found a school that shared her religious beliefs, Brigham Young University.
Brigham Young University, or BYU for short, is a private, nonprofit research university. The school serves about 33,500 students and is located in Provo, Utah, a 45-minute drive south of Salt Lake City, the state capital. Mormons led by Brigham Young founded the city in 1847, and the Mormon Church established BYU 25 years later. In the end, Paulson says the relatively low cost of attendance is what interested her the most about studying political science at BYU, but she also liked the idea that she would share similar beliefs with the other students, even though she was from a different country. And, at the very least, partying would not be an issue. Alcohol, tobacco, drugs, and even coffee and tea are all banned on campus because the Mormon religion bars their use. The school also does not permit members of the opposite sex to enter each other's bedrooms in on-campus housing. They can only enter the shared areas, and they may not enter each other's on-campus housing at all during most late-night hours. Utah holds the largest Mormon population in the United States. However, Paulson says, even though she had joined a familiar community, she still felt a little like an outsider.
The community is different here in many ways. Mostly here I associate with people who've been Mormons for, you know, their whole lives. I have not always been a Mormon, and I'm kind of made to be in a minority, I think. Here, a lot of people are culturally religious. I'm much more faith-based as well. You kind of have to be, because culturally, Mormonism and Danishness does not really match.
Paulson says she had worried about the possible beliefs she might find among people in Provo. She considers herself open-minded and politically liberal. She had heard that many people in rural America were very conservative. But she says the more American students she met, the more friends she made. It did not matter if she disagreed with some people about issues like gun control or immigration, for example. She says almost everyone she met was open to discussing differing opinions respectfully. And some were even willing to change their opinions based on such discussions, she says.
Faris Nafa is a 22-year-old BYU student from Amman, Jordan. During his final year in high school, he decided he wanted to attend a college or university in Europe or the United States. Around the same time, BYU representatives visited Nafa's high school. Nafa liked what they said about the school. So, in 2013, he began studies at BYU for a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. Nafa is not Mormon, but he says he did not care that he would be part of a small, non-Mormon minority at the school. Nafa grew up Christian in a majority Muslim country, so he is used to being different. Also, he says his parents liked that the school has firm rules governing student behavior. In time, Nafa says, the school would have a greater effect on him than he could have expected. He was placed in on-campus housing with an American who quickly became his best friend. This friend brought Nafa to meet his family, and before long, they were treating Nafa like one of their own. But more importantly, Nafa notes, his friend taught him to really enjoy outdoor activities.
Back in Jordan, Nafa says he never was that interested in activities like hiking or skiing. However, Utah is home to 5 national parks and is relatively close to 3 other national parks out of state, including the Grand Canyon in Arizona. Utah also has many areas in which to ski. Nafa says the natural beauty around Provo made the outdoors impossible to resist.
Going from just doing normal stuff every weekend to doing really extreme outdoor sport activities has just been a life-changing experience for sure. I definitely feel changed because I'm not doing what I used to do before coming to college. Now I'm like experiencing new things.
Nafa liked these new experiences so much that he ended up staying longer than he had first planned. He also changed fields of study and decided to join a BYU program in accounting. This program let him finish his bachelor's degree in 3 years instead of the usual 4. Then he was immediately accepted into a 2-year BYU master's degree program in 2016. He was able to take part thanks to financial support from the school and its international student office. Louise Rosa Paulson says she also plans to stay in the United States after receiving her bachelor's degree. And she wants to seek a master's degree beginning this fall at a school on the East Coast. Paulson says the secret to feeling at home in a strange land is holding on to things that make you remember the place you are from.
Find ways to have your fun little cultural niches and like stay normal and stay sane, because you will get homesick, but you can find ways to be happy here anyways.
I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Lucia Malanig.
Now, Words and Their Stories, a program from VOA Learning English. Today, we talk about a problem we have all faced. It is when you have to make a decision, but the choices you have are not very appealing. In fact, some of those choices are really bad. We have all had to choose from leftovers that no one else wanted. In other words, we had to scrape the bottom of the barrel. As you probably know, a barrel is a round, usually wooden, container. It has curved sides and flat ends. Barrels are often found on farms. They are usually strong and good for holding tools. Some makers of alcoholic drinks, such as wine and bourbon, let their products age in oak barrels. Some people say the right wood gives the final product a smoky quality. Hundreds of years ago, barrels had another, much more important purpose. This was long before the United States became independent. Before then, people often stored preserved food in barrels and then put the barrels in cold rooms. This would keep the food from going bad. A professor at the University of Connecticut studied this custom. D.M. Kinsman's report is called Meat Preparation and Preservation in Colonial America. Kinsman writes that many colonial families got through cold winters by keeping their meat supplies in a barrel filled with salted water or brine. Then they kept the barrel in a cold room. He added that the salted meat barrel and the icy chilliness of winter cold rooms saw many a northern colonial family through what might otherwise have been a disastrous year. Over time, as people ate from the barrel, the food stored would slowly disappear. Finally, when supplies were nearly gone, hungry people had to take whatever they could find from the bottom of the barrel. This was probably the worst food available. And this is where the expression to scrape the bottom of the barrel comes from. You can also simply say the bottom of the barrel. When you have used up all the good choices, you have hit the bottom of the barrel. So, hitting the bottom of the barrel means you will probably have to settle for a less desirable option. You are choosing something simply as a last resort. When nothing else is available or works, we simply choose the last resort. These are all great ways to describe times when your choices are less than perfect. Now let's hear how to use these expressions in a conversation. Two friends are on vacation. They have gone to a quiet seaside town for a week. However, the clouds are moving in. Let's listen as they discuss their options for some quiet reading time indoors. You can also learn some useful beach terms.
Too bad it's raining.
Well, it's a good thing we spent all day yesterday enjoying the sun and swimming in the ocean.
You're right. I think I'll sit back with a good book.
Good idea. Hey, there are some books on this bookcase.
Perfect. I love how people on vacation leave behind their beach reads. Can you read some of the titles?
Let's see. Would you rather read Love at Low Tide or Sandcastle Romance?
I'm not really in the mood for a romance novel. What else is there?
There's some self-help books. Surviving a Coast-to-Coast Relationship. And When It Comes to Love, Are You Lost at Sea?
No, thanks.
Romance on the Waves?
Are you serious?
Okay, as a last resort, you could read The Sexiest Sunburn.
Who thinks of these titles? There has to be something else other than romance novels.
Nope. We are really scraping the bottom of the literary barrel with these choices. We may have to settle on reading some takeout menus.
Ugh, I give up. We're on vacation. Hand me Romance on the Waves. If we've reached the bottom of the barrel, I might as well enjoy it. What about you?
I wasn't kidding about reading the takeout menus. I'll find us something good for dinner. And that's Words and Their Stories. I'm Ana Mateo.
Lions, tigers, and other mammals are staying awake at night to avoid human beings, a new study finds. Scientists have long known that human activity can lead to changes in nature. Many mammals may move around less or travel to distant places to avoid contact with people. By being awake at night, mammals can also be on guard against possible attackers and spend less time looking for food. The latest research found even activities like hiking and camping can frighten animals and cause them to become more active at night. Caitlin Gaynor of the University of California, Berkeley, led the study. She said, "It suggests that animals might be playing it safe around people. We may think that we leave no trace when we're just hiking in the woods, but our mere presence can have lasting consequences." She and her team of researchers examined 76 other studies involving 62 species on 6 continents. Among the animals studied were lions in Tanzania, tigers in Nepal, and otters in Brazil. Researchers compared how much time those animals were active at night in areas of human activity, such as hunting, hiking, and farming. The team found that, on average, human presence caused an increase of about 20% in nighttime activity, even in creatures that usually sleep at night. Results were published in the journal Science. The findings are unusual because no one else has gathered all this information and looked at it in such detail, noted Ana Benitez Lopez of Radboud University in the Netherlands. She examined the research but was not part of the study. Ecologist Marley Tucker was surprised that any kind of human activity is enough for mammals to see people as a threat. "It's a little bit scary," she said. Tucker works at the Goethe University Frankfurt in Germany. She was not part of the study. Caitlin Gaynor said, "The change in hours will affect animals that already have trouble in the darkness." But she said the changes could also help other animals reduce conflict with people. Humans can do their thing during the day. Wildlife can do their thing at night, she said. Gaynor added, "That way, people would be sharing the planet with many other species." I'm Jonathan Evans.
The FIFA World Cup Soccer Championship in Russia is the most costly ever held. Officials say the total cost will be $15 billion. Close to $3 billion has been spent on 12 new or improved stadiums. At least $8 billion has been spent on infrastructure, including new roads, railroads, and airports. Now, experts question whether there will be a good return for the Russian taxpayer. Professor Leonid Grigoryev is an economist at the Analytical Center for the Government of the Russian Federation. He offers an unusual answer. He compares the World Cup to a wedding dress. On one hand, it's necessary. It makes everybody happy, Grigoryev told VOA. The exact economic efficiency definitely cannot be defined in American quarterly financial reports. It's a long-term story. We still hope to become not only a hockey country, but a football country. Brazil held the last World Cup in 2014 at an estimated cost of $11 billion. 4 years later, the difference is clear to Brazilian football fans in Moscow. Comparing Brazil with Russia, the infrastructure here is much better than ours, Márcio Pessoa told VOA as he walked through Red Square. Russia's $15 billion investment is aimed at improving the country's image, even as it faces sanctions. International restrictions were put in place over Russia's activities in Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea in 2014. Dmitry Oreshkin is a political expert. He said Russian President Vladimir Putin tries to govern as though the sanctions are not important. Despite sanctions, we conduct such a gorgeous World Cup. Despite sanctions, we go ahead with the war in Syria. Until the very moment that they start feeling that for all this pleasure, they are paying, said Oreshkin. The first to feel the financial difficulty are likely to be the middle-aged people looking forward to retirement. On opening day of the World Cup last week, the government announced an increase in the pension age from 60 to 65 for men, and a much bigger jump for women from 55 to 63. Eva lives in Moscow. The 62-year-old told VOA that most Russians were not surprised. She said she believed that officials thought that the championship would ease the effect of the news. Eva described a joke that people were telling about the increase in the retirement age. Yesterday, I had 4 years until pension age. Today, I have 9 years. And they still keep telling us that you can't get your youth back, she said. Russia said the World Cup is partly a gift for its young people. There is talk of unforgettable memories and new buildings. The World Cup ends on July 15th. But its value will be measured in the coming years. I'm Susan Shand.
A recent study by the Pew Research Center shows nearly 90% of Americans believe in God, either as described in the Bible or in some kind of higher power. And in a separate study, more than 500 American Christians provided their thoughts on what they think God looks like. That study was carried out by researchers at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Their results were published this month in the journal PLOS ONE. In the UNC study, subjects were shown hundreds of different pairs of faces and then asked to choose which one looked more like the face of God. The researchers used the responses to create images aimed at reflecting those views. The study noted that the Christian Bible gives differing descriptions of God. Genesis 1:27 describes man as created in God's image. But in other places, such as John 4:24, the Bible describes God as a spirit being. In addition, many historical artist creations show God as an old, white-bearded, Caucasian man. But the UNC study found that, in general, many Christians see God differently than that popular image: younger, more feminine, and less Caucasian. To understand the range of ideas about God, researchers examined several groups within the American Christian community. Among the groups were Americans who identified themselves as politically liberal or politically conservative. In the U.S., liberal usually relates to using government action to support social and political change. Conservative often relates to limiting government regulation and finding private solutions to problems. The researchers said liberals saw God as more feminine, younger, and more loving. They said conservatives saw God as older, more Caucasian, and more powerful. Joshua Conrad Jackson was one of the lead researchers for the study. He said the differences based on political beliefs could have resulted from the type of societies that liberals and conservatives want. He said past research has shown that conservatives generally feel more at ease in a well-ordered society, one that would be best controlled by a powerful God. But liberals, he said, seek a more tolerant society overseen by a more loving God. The study also found differences based on people's age and race. Younger people pictured a young-looking God, while older Christians imagined an older God. In addition, people who reported being physically attractive also believed in a physically attractive God. African Americans generally described God as looking African American, while white Americans imagined a Caucasian God. Researcher Kurt Gray said the results showed that, in general, people imagined a God that looked similar to themselves. People often project their beliefs and traits onto others, and our study shows that God's appearance is no different. People believe in a God who not only thinks like them, but also looks like them, he said. But there was one area where this was not the case. The gender of the respondent did not appear to matter. Researchers observed that men and women both believed in an equally masculine-looking God. I'm Brian Lynn.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.